Welcome to the All Creatures Podcast. This is Chris, and I'm joined with Angie, and oh my god, man. We are, like we said, we promised last week, we have an awesome guest today, Mr. Corbin Maxey. This is huge for us. So, Corbin, welcome.
Thank you so much. I hope this wasn't the big surprise at the end of the Red Wolf episode, was it?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to apologize in advance to all the listeners who were like, Corbin what? Corbin who?
I know it's hard in your shoes to like appreciate yourself, you know, sometimes. I'm glad to hear that from you, but I like to tell people you're like the new Jack Hanna. You're the up and coming Jack Hanna. You are the new face of animal conservation.
Absolutely. And during each podcast, we always describe the animal, and I encourage listeners to go ahead and Google it so they can learn, see a more visual. And I think if they do Google your name, they should get a visual and learn a little bit more about you. And then they'll also start to realize that you're an amazing public figure. You're our first public figure that's acknowledged our existence.
The first one that has a Wikipedia page, I guess you could say.
Exactly. I mean, we all know Leonardo DiCaprio has been blowing me off for months now. So
I look just like him, though. So yeah.
Yes, you do. Yes, you're a younger version. Mm-hmm. But we're just so happy to have you here and that we've been able to touch base about animals and conservation. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to have a lot of fun in this interview. So please stick with us. For those of you who aren't familiar with Corbin, you will be by the end of the podcast, and you'll be a big fan like us. He does have a great following on Facebook, some of the other social media platforms like Twitter. And not only does Corbin have his own podcast where he interviews different people that do wild, awesome things with animals, but he's an avid educator, he's a conservationist, a reptile lover, and do you still have any reptiles on your property,
Corbin? Yes, like 27.
Oh.
Yeah, 27, the animals I started. Yeah, I have, we could go into that, but yeah, alligators, pythons, tortoises, an emu, and a 65-pound turkey with a bad heart condition named Tom.
Aww,
not a reptile,
Tom,
but yeah. God bless him.
Well, good.
Yeah, God bless him.
And just to get started, why don't you give us a little bit of background for the listeners that aren't familiar with you about how you got started in animal education and then also in the animal entertainment type field.
Yeah, well, I always had a passion for animals, and my family was always the family that had cats and dogs, but we also had like rabbits, and I had a pet snake. My parents say like I had a pet snake. I have a picture with me with a pet snake and diapers, which is insane. You know, we just had tons of different animals. Yeah, not a pretty sight. But no, so I grew up my childhood in a tiny, tiny little town. Have you guys ever heard of Roby Creek, Idaho?
No.
No. What's the population though? No. To give us a little perspective.
Yeah. It was population 4. It was me, my mom, my dad, and my sister. I swear.
I thought I grew up in a small town. Yeah. Oh my word.
Small. Yeah. So I grew up, and so just to give the listeners just an idea, like it was in the middle of the mountains in my family's cabin that we literally kind of built from scratch. And so we, you know, when most kids had friends or when most kids like had pavement or green grass, seriously, like I was out catching frogs and snakes and lizards and toads. And that was my childhood. And that was like my basis for like, wow, you know, I was always surrounded by animals. Mm-hmm. They were like my friends and, you know, kind of, that's kind of where I developed my passion. And then at 12, I rescued my first ball python named Reggie, who's still alive.
Oh, awesome.
Wow.
Which is shocking. He was old when I got him. So he's like, he's like a complete geriatric.
And where did you rescue him from?
But, so he was from a local pet store. So some of the fun things I would do as a kid, like it would be like going to Disneyland, would be going to the local pet store.
Sure.
And so it was a common thing. My dad would just take me to go look at the, I don't know, mainly I love the reptiles and stuff like that. And some guy walked in and was like, I have this ball python. And he talked to the store manager behind me and he said, do you want it? And the store manager's like, no, like we don't have any use for it. And I'm like, Dad, no, please. And that's how I got Reggie.
That's awesome.
And then Yeah. Yeah. And then a year later, I thought, wow, this is amazing how many of these unwanted reptiles. I thought I would love to start a reptile rescue in my parents' bonus room. And then at 13, a year later, I had over 60 different animals in my parents' bonus room. Bless them.
And you bring up a really good point that I've touched on, or we've touched on podcasts about unwanted exotic animals. And I always promote, there's groups out there that, like the Pet Amnesty, where people can get information on how to surrender their unwanted pets. I always recommend to people to do a lot of education before getting any pets, whether it's a dog, a cat, or especially an exotic pet such as a reptile or bird, because they're not for everyone and they can live a long time. And you're the reptile expert, so you could speak more on it, but people aren't aware that reptiles are really hard to keep as far as they don't eat a lot, but they're very sensitive with their temperature and humidity guidelines. So maybe you can touch a little bit on why within 1 year you had a house full of reptiles that nobody wanted.
So first and foremost, you know, reptiles can be difficult pets, you know, but some can make excellent pets, like some beginner pets, you know, bearded dragons, corn snakes, etc. But the reptiles that I was rescuing were animals that like do not really make good pets, like alligators, green iguanas, and alligators, first of all, they are illegal to keep here in Idaho. Mm-hmm. So please don't tell anybody.
We'll edit that part out.
She's looking at me like, no, I'm kidding. No, I can show you my permits. I pay a hefty price for them. No. Some of the animals just get too large.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, Corbett, just move to Florida, ahead. Man. I'm not kidding you. I got done teaching a class. I walk out back and there's it's probably only like a 4 foot gator, but sitting there hissing at me as I'm trying to go to my car. And I'm like, oh my God, just move to Florida, man. They're everywhere. They're everywhere.
Oh my. Yeah. And they're like not a big deal. Like to you, like here in Idaho, I'll show an alligator and people are like, oh my God, like what's going on? Yeah. But yeah, in Florida, they're just like,
any water, advice for people in Florida, just assume there's a gator in it. Any puddle, anything, there's gators in it.
After a big rain.
Yes, they're everywhere. They are everywhere.
I just did an interview last week with Business Insider. They wanted my advice on what to do if you get attacked by an alligator. And so it's like, it was, anyway, I gave my expert advice on what to do.
Run.
But of course it's extremely rare. Definitely run. So anyway.
So Corbett, I've listened to your podcast, and I'm going to do this for him, and I'm going to reiterate it too at the end. If you haven't, because Corbin does this for all of his guests, and it's amazing, dude. You're awesome. Pause the podcast. Go look Animals to the Max. Click subscribe. And don't forget to rate and review. Give him a 5-star rating. We need to come together as a community. This is what Angie and I keep pushing. You know, as we talk to experts throughout the world, we all need to come together if we're going to tackle this mass extinction event. So please, you know, support Corbin and what he's doing. You know, I've obviously researched you, watched your videos, watched your interviews, the late night talk shows. And it really, like, it gets me so excited. I was so excited after talking to you last week, because I remember being a kid, and this is way before you were born. Angie was still probably a baby, but I used to watch Mutual of Omaha.
Yeah. Way to like age her. I love it.
Yeah. Well, at last pod, she's like, you were born in 1965, right? I was like, no, I'm a 70s baby. Yeah. Angie's almost a late 70s. Angie's a late 80s baby,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
But I used to watch Mutual of Omaha, you know, a long time ago, and then watching, you know, like Jack Hanna and the others go on these shows. So, you know, from your perspective, like, I could just see you getting the youth really engaged and excited. So how does that feel? Like, in your mind, you know, as you go out there and talk to all these people, what is really your goal in trying to get people excited about this stuff?
I think just like, I would like to be the voice for this next generation, just like the Jack Hanna. I love getting people excited about animals. I love getting people excited about conservation and letting people know, just of all ages, like kids to even adults, that they can make a difference a lot of times. And that's a theme. By the way, I love your podcast. I love your podcast so much because you basically give listeners tips, and they say, like, listen, like, you could take small steps just to help the environment. environment to help protect biodiversity. And so, I love getting people excited about animals. And, you know, if I could change like someone's like perception about animals, or someone's decision, let's say, to use straws or not, or someone to not maybe kill a snake, or someone to maybe not fear wolves. Like, I feel like, you know what? I have done my job, and I take it so seriously, and I like to have fun doing it. But, that I like to use my platforms, especially like the national TV shows. I'm like, okay, this is a job. I get to like talk in front of 3 million people for, I don't know, 3.5, 4 minutes. And I try to get all the coolest facts I can in, and I try to get people excited about wildlife.
Yeah, and I'll just jump in so Angie can ask a question. But yeah, it's like, you know, Steve Irwin. Maybe, you know, me and Angie's generation and your generation to an extent, too.
Yeah, he just got a Hollywood star. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he sure did.
His enthusiasm is what got people excited about it. And so I applaud you.
Yeah, he was just so brilliant, so fun to watch. I mean,
He was great. He was my first, like, living up in the middle of nowhere. We had this little rink-a-dink satellite, and for some reason we were able to get Animal Planet. I remember as a kid looking at the Crocodile Hunter, I was like, what is this? I loved it. As a kid, like, I loved it. He was, such an icon, and
he's so awesome.
How do you go from being an animal lover, like a lot of us probably listen to the podcast, to then having 60 reptiles in your house? I like want to meet your mom and shake her hand and tell her she was a great woman.
First of all, you're probably envisioning my mom like this hardcore, rough and tough, like reptile gal. She is not. She is a hairstylist. She works at the number one salon in Boise. She is so girly, like beyond, you know, really into that stuff. So God bless my parents. But the coolest thing is they always supported me. So
So bless they support them. You and you get this reptile room, guest room, which I just love the visual on that. I would like to see photos if possible someday. But you get the room, reptile room, and then shortly thereafter, correct me if I'm wrong, you had your first guest appearance with Jay Leno.
Yes. Well, okay. Well, first of all, just to backtrack, because it seems like for listeners are probably like, wait, how did this kid? I mean, like, there's tons of people who have reptiles. Tons of kids have reptiles. How do you end up on Jay Leno? And so I always loved, and that's like the number one question people ask me is like, how did you get into TV? And there was not like a direct path. When I grew up, I never thought that's what I would want to do. I always loved entertaining. I always loved, as you can tell, and just like you, Angie, I love talking. And so, as a kid, I just wouldn't, you know what I mean? Yeah. I just love it. Blah, blah, blah. I heard I was like the most annoying kid.
I know.
But,
I could talk to a wall for sure. Yeah.
I do sometimes. I have talked to a wall. No, I'm kidding. I remember being in love. We would go to our local zoo show, and there was like this rinky-dink bird show. And anyway, I loved just how he educated people and presented to audiences. And so I would have like make-believe, like my dad made the stage. It was like pieces of straw with a piece of plywood, and I would just catch beetles and cockroaches and just pretend to sound ridiculous, but it's a true story. I would pretend to imaginary audiences to educate. And then just to not make it too long, basically I had 60 different animals when I was 13, and I loved sharing my knowledge with other people. And so I would call local daycares. I would call YMCAs and be like, can I please come and do a reptile show? I would beg them. And I remember, I'll never forget. Like, I just remember like getting one, and it was like, yes. And this was all like pro bono. This was all, I mean, I just showed up, and I was like a big chubby kid. I was like 5 foot. And I had this giant safari cloak, not cloak, but it's a big cloak now, but this giant shirt and this safari hat. And anyway, I loved it. And I loved I did that for a few years. And I remember like one time someone gave me like, I think they gave me $25, and I was like, oh my God, I'm set. That's amazing. $25. Yeah. Yeah. And then to answer your question about Jay Leno, we were always huge fans of The Tonight Show, and they were doing a talent scout audition for teenagers with weird or unusual talents. And so I didn't really have a talent, but I had all these exotic animals. And so my mom wrote in for me, and she's so witty and she's so quick, like with one-liners, like God bless her. I had no idea she was writing in for me, but she said, hi, my name is Corbin. At the time I turned 14, so I'm, 14 years old, and I have all these exotic reptiles. Call me the next crocodile hunter, .. or just call me. That was it. And,
Whoa, go mom.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, now I really want to shake her hand.
Yeah, go mom. And then, and then a week later, I got a call from the producers, and it was like, I was like, what? And anyway, it really happened fast. Of course, I had to send like, you know, other audition tapes and this and that. And, you know, it took a few months, but they decided to give me my own guest spot on the show. So instead of with the teenagers, they were like, you're going to be the second guest. Yeah. And I was like, what? You know, like, so you have a main celebrity, me, and then the musical act.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And so it was amazing. And guess who I was on with?
Ooh, I'm dying. Guess. I'm dying.
Pamela Anderson.
That's like every teenager boy's dream.
I know. 14.
Right?
Yeah.
I want to be like, Pamela, I've seen your videos, but no. But I remember seeing her, and it was like my first encounter with a celebrity. And I was like, she looks just like how she looks. She would look great. That's she just hilarious. Was like, wow.
Well, I want to say that you went from Idaho town population of 4 to Hollywood for this
LA.
This show is just amazing. And you know, and you went from like $25 earned at like a birthday party or a daycare to that. Yeah. So that is such a great story, Corbin. I haven't heard that in all your interviews. I haven't heard that one yet. So I really it. And it just helps to show that I'm being very candid here.
It's
supposed to show, though, for all of our listeners or kids out there that you can do, I mean, especially now with all the different platforms that we didn't, your mom probably hand wrote that in a letter and like put it in the mail maybe or something, but now there's so.
What was it that long ago?
Telegram, Angie.
She actually sent a pigeon, and so.
wait, am I dating my own self here?
Yes. Western Union.
Yes.
Did she ride a horse all the way to LA?
No, we actually both rode carriages. We all had a carriage and we rode to Burbank.
Regardless, there's plenty of ways to get your name out there and your passion out there and your expert talents or not, no talents. And I love that your mom saw your reptile kind of education as a talent. And because all of us that are interested in animals, even from the time that I worked at the zoo to now in my graduate program, like you said, any chance I get, whether it's for one person or five, to be an educator is amazing. Or Chris, when we worked together at the university, he was always pushing me to like do blogs or go give talks and basically just get people excited, get the information out there, get, you know, especially with science and animal conservation and animal biology and all that is definitely, we need more. We need more science-based information out there. And then, but not only that, like us scientists sometimes can be a little stuffy or boring because we don't have the training to get the message across. So that's why I think it's so awesome to have somebody like yourself who, of course, does love talking, but has maybe a little bit more training in how to look and act, you know, and get people excited.
Well, and you know what? Yeah, and I have to say the same for both of you. I didn't believe that you guys are both doctors because you are very good podcast guest hosts. No, I'm serious. It is. Like, I was thinking, wait, let me check the credentials. I did a quick little Google search to make sure.
You can buy any degree online. It's good, Corbin, though. Any degree online you can buy, so.
Oh, I wish.
God, it would have been so much easier. So much easier. Oh, to buy my degree.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, I know.
Different story.
I know. Well, you went to, University of Idaho? Is that right? It was
no. Boise State.
That's
actually,
Boise, that's offensive. Okay.
One of those.
That's offensive.
Hey, I like.
Yeah, it's
Boise
very.
State.
Yeah, U of I. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. We're known for the blue field.
I went to a state school as well, Corbin. So I feel your pain when people mistake it for the other one. So.
Well, no one knows where Cal Poly is.
I know.
Well, like, come on, you know. Where I did my undergrad. Yeah, so Boise State, and you majored in biology or zoology? And
correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Because like your first guest was one of your friends, right? She's like a big conservation expert now.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Valerie Hershey. Yeah. 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 I love going to Boise State. And I have to stress just to, you know, maybe even young listeners, it is so important to just pursue your education. Mm-hmm. And, it just can open so many different doors. I mean, so many doors. And I'm going to be honest, it was really hard for me because since my, you know, my first Tonight Show appearance, I had appeared several other times. And so mm-hmm. when you're 17, getting out of high school, you're on this high of being like, oh, I'm on the Tonight Show and I have these animals and I have my career path and I want to do television. There was a part of me that thought, you know what? Why do I need to get my education or this or that? And mm-hmm. there are people telling me, just pursue TV. You don't need, you're fine. You've already made it. And I'm mm-hmm. so happy. I mean, mm-hmm. with my parents' guidance and just inside, I thought, you know what? I need to pursue my education. And that was one of the best decisions of my life. So please go to school. I don't want this to sound like a big speech.
Yes. But it's always true.
I always,
when I'm working with younger people, especially for me, young girls, I always encourage education because it's something that cannot be taken away from you, no matter what. Later on in life, married, divorced, whatever have you, your education is always there. Or even if you went into another career and it failed, like TV or acting, you can always fall back into education and all the connections
that is,
you made along
and that's,
the way.
Yeah. And that's such a good thing to say, Angie, because I mean, TV is so hard. I mean, acting is so hard. I mean, it's such a difficult business. But another reason why I think it was so important to get my education is if I'm going on all these shows, like the Today Show, the Tonight Show, Late Night, or being an expert for Inside Edition and stuff like that, like, and I didn't have a degree, you know what I mean? Or maybe I didn't have, you know, I didn't have a science related degree. I think some people might be like a little like, oh, okay. Like, I don't know.
I would have, just to be real.
Would you? Really? Really?
Well, I mean, yes. Credibility, of course. when I checked you out from Google or whatever, when we first made contact with each other, that was the first thing I looked at, and it just, it gives a little extra line of credibility. I don't think that everybody you don't necessarily maybe have to have it, or it doesn't necessarily mean you're smarter or better mm-hmm. or anything mm-hmm. like that. It just showed me for sure that you were in it for the right reasons and that you had kind of paid your dues and had learned a lot about animal biology and how they live and their physiology, and knowing that it made me be a little bit more endearing to want to go further. And I might be completely wrong. I mean, obviously if you, I have no idea if some of the other animal experts,
zookeeping,
like Steve Irwin, had degrees, college degrees. But in this day and age, there's probably a lot more competition, right? In any field that you're in, whether you're in animal entertainment or whether you want to be a zookeeper. And so the degree, I think, just helps, A, you can fall back on it, and B, it helps like set you apart. And so for me, I was like, okay, you know, this young kid, I mean, you're not a kid by any stretch of imagination, but this nice young, you know, Steve.
I have a beard, Angie. I have like three whiskers right here. You can see them. I can get closer.
Oh, that's awesome. Yes, yes. No, but, you know, just it for me, it was just, it made it a little bit more, what's the word, Chris? Help me out. Just for me.
No, it's a sense of, you know, When people, they always look at the credentials.
They do,
and so when you're out there,
this day and age,
it just gives you mm-hmm. that edge. Yeah, it just gives you that edge. Like, not only do you have the personality, the charisma, stage presence, all that stuff that's important, but you have the mm-hmm. the mind. You know, I guess, and just listening to you talk about get education. I mean, bravo.
Yes.
You know, and we're, you know, it's like Angie and I are in our training or our PhD training. We're educators, obviously, and we love education. That's why we do our podcast. But, you know, like Angie said, you're doing it for the right reasons. And somebody like you can make a huge difference in the world.
Because you have
for
the numbers,
so many species.
The following.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So bravo. Yeah.
Well, and that leads me a little bit into my next question or two is, so of course, I looked you up and then looked at a lot of your clips, and then, of course, looked at your education level to see how much of an expert, quote unquote, you were, and felt pretty secure with that. But then I took it to the next level, and I, coming from my background in animal and animal husbandry and working for the zoo, I'm a big believer in, of course, animal welfare and when animals are living under human care, whether it's a pet, your dog, or if they're in a zoological setting or a conservation center, that they need to be respected and that they need to be cared for in an appropriate way. And so the zoo that I have worked with, or that Chris and I have worked with on the podcast, different people that we've interviewed, they are typically they're accredited by the AZA, which, Chris, what does AZA stand for?
Association Zoos and Aquariums. Don't ask Angie because she...
I always screw up.
Her husband would be like so mad.
What do you say? What do you say? The American Zoological Association.
I just always chop it up. So, but at any rate, that is something, you know, I worry about people making sure that the animals... exploitation. Yeah. And so that was the next thing that I looked up. I'm like, okay, you know, are the animals taken good care of? And so one of my questions is, how do you make sure that the animals that you are either borrowing, I assume, or getting for a public appearance for the Today Show guy, listeners, he's also been on the Today Show with, Kathy? And
the former, former First Lady Barbara Bush. Oh my God.
Yes.
The daughter. Yeah.
Tyra Banks. I mean, not that she's up anywhere near Barbara Bush, but I mean, I'm actually, as I speak, their number one in-studio animal expert currently, but that can always change. Yes. Like, knock on wood.
Show.
I love it.
Keep pushing.
Yeah.
We'll keep
promoting.
Yes.
For our listeners, how do you ensure that let's say you're bringing a crocodile or a snake, or of course you do mammals now too, because you're big time. Not that reptiles aren't big time, but how do you make sure that those animals, you're able to get them, like in New York City, and that they're coming from reputable places and they're well taken care of?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the animals' comfort, first of all, is our number one concern, as well as their safety. It's all about the animals. And so if you even like watch my segments, a common thing I say is, oh, animals are taking over the studio, because literally that's what we do. We let the animals do whatever they want. So that's why when you usually see stuff happening, there's birds flying everywhere, penguins pooping on the floor. Like, I mean, just, you know, animals munching away. So their safety, their comfort is our number one concern, but we also go through a rigorous process with a permitting process. So you cannot just go into New York City and display animals or go on TV. You have to go through a permit process, and it is full of documents. You have to make sure all the animals have health certificates. They're coming from a reputable facility. I usually only work with AZA facilities, or I'll also work with local wildlife rehabilitation centers, but everyone has to have their license. Sometimes they have an on-call vet. It is a big, big process, a lot of paperwork, but it's not just like, hey, you know, we're going to bring this spider monkey or, you know, this or that. And anyway, yeah. It's a very, it's definitely a process. Everything's looked at.
A lot of prep work, like months in advance of planning for whatever date they're going to have you. It takes a lot of time and coordination.
Sometimes it's not months. Sometimes I just get like a week or like 2 weeks, and that's me scrambling, you know, trying to smooze the New York people. I love you, Tamika. Anyway, but that's her name. I need to take her out for drinks because she's a sweetheart. But I really want to say that we do not just – I don't just select random animals. All the animals, and I'm sure you've noticed with the clips, they're all comfortable on TV. The reason why is these are all animal ambassadors. And just like with your experience working in the zoo, you have public education animals. And so we're not bringing an animal that would be uncomfortable out in front of, first of all, cameras or lights. These are all animals that were born in captivity. They're all used to human contact. And that's why you'll see the animals 99.9% of the time, they're just doing their thing because they're used to this outreach.
That's a good point. Yeah, a lot of zoos in their education programs do have handable animals. And I know from my experience, some of them have been orphaned, you know, so they're hand raised by people. So they would never be good candidates for like release in the wild, things like that. So, yeah, it makes sense. So I have a question. Talking about animals on stage, has there been an animal that has scared you? You've been like, oh, my God.
Yes. 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 I remember. Oh, my God. So, yes. It just scared me. I'm having flashbacks. And this was 4 years ago. It's so weird you said that because my Facebook memory came up. Yeah. And it was 4 years ago with Kathy Lee and Hoda. And it was during my younger years, right? I'd only appeared, I think, like just a handful of times on the show. And there was a little, Oh, what is – oh, squirrel monkey. Anyway, I talked to the handler previously, this and that. Anyway, the squirrel monkey and the handler are stuck in traffic. Kathy Lee and Hoda are, like, walking out. Like, everything's going on. This is a live show. Anyway, they end up getting the squirrel monkey in, and the handler puts the squirrel monkey on the table and proceeds to tell me 10 seconds before air, just be careful, he might attack.
Oh, my God.
And so I'm holding, like, this leash – I have Kathy Lee and Hoda on my side, and I'm like, wait, what? Like, this is not something, like, nothing happened. He sat there and ate his piece of fruit and was fine. But it was just, anyway, mind you, it was just one of those things, like, are you, like, and I wasn't scared, but I'm like, okay, I'm like, what am I going to do? This is live TV. So that was a moment, but that was in my younger years. Now I think I know how to handle the situation a little bit
better.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, I just want to say, I saw that clip with that alligator snapping turtle. Again, something you can see in Florida, you know, walking out of my wife's building, the entomology building at UF campus, there's a freaking huge alligator snapping turtle just right there, you know, so all sorts of wildlife in UF. But God, that one you picked up, geez, dude, that thing's huge.
Dude. It was so heavy. I was dead. Like, and it was so funny because they kept on. So that was for Late Night with Seth Meyers. And for those of you, check it out. It's on YouTube, but they even had me pick up. It was so heavy, you guys. I was dying. And they had me pick it up, you know, cause they wanted to get stuff for their Snapchat. And it was so funny. So I worked with an animal handler, and he's like 6'5", this giant buff guy. And he's like, hey, Corbin, I can pick up the snapping turtle if you want. And I'm like, no way, dude. Like, and I'm just thinking, like, you know, I worked so hard to get on this damn show. Excuse me. I am going to pick up this snapping turtle, and I'm just like holding him, and I look so calm, and my arms are just like, I was so sore the next day, but I made it look seamless. If you watch it, you'll never know.
I'm like, dude, that guy, I'm like, man, you got some muscles on him. Like, oh, my football days.
Yeah.
No, that was awesome.
Oh, he was heavy.
Yeah, I saw that clip. I was like, holy, how much was that thing weigh? Like 250 pounds?
It was ridiculous. It was over. Yeah. It wasn't that much, but and it came in this giant. So they have this giant crate. He had a custom built crate, and so it was like tall. So I had to like go in and like do the whole like it was insane. But that was such an ancient animal. It was like a dinosaur. Yeah. I mean, I think it was over like, I think he said like 75 to 100 years old. Like, this was a giant.
Wow.
Anyway, just a living dinosaur, really.
So, Corbin, I've been dying to ask this. You said that, of course, the animals that are on these late night shows or any of the talk shows, they're treated like royal guests. So my question is, do they have their own dressing room or green room? And my second question is, do the talk show hosts really like animals? Do they seem to like animals? Are they generally excited, or is it just part of the shtick?
Okay, great question. First of all, the animals are treated better than people. It doesn't matter if you are the biggest celebrity in the world. So they have their own green rooms. It really depends what show. So when I do the Today Show, they have their own separate big pipe and drape area outside of the green room. It's huge, just to kind of keep them more comfortable, just to kind of minimize the people going back and forth. When I do like Late Night with Seth Meyers, or I just did Megyn Kelly Today, they have their own separate room. So literally, like, I mean, they put all the handlers in the back, and then the animals have this like nice historic room that has probably been around, you know, for years. And anyway, so yeah, so the animals are taken care of. Great. So host wise, it really depends on which host. Okay. I do the Today Show the most, and I think the funniest one I work with is Kathy Lee, because even if I'm not on with Kathy Lee, but I'm on like a different hour, and she sees me in the hall, she's just like, oh my God. She just rolls her eyes in the back of her head. I mean, she just looks like, oh crap. Like, are you kidding me? Anyway, so she's super fun, and I I love working with her because that's how she is during the segments. But all of them seem genuinely pretty interested. Some are more interested than others. I think Megyn Kelly, which I was so honored, I was her first animal guest, and that was last month.
Okay.
She was really, really into it. And she was, because it was her first animal segment, and she was like asking the questions. And I really think it just depends on the talent. Some, like, you know, some hosts you don't see until you like get out there, or they don't want to see the animals. They want to save the organic reaction. So like with Seth Meyers, he was super into it, and we were like, hey, do you want to come see the animals backstage? He's like, no, I'll wait until we're out and just keep that organic.
Oh, cool. So, yeah, that makes, Yeah,
well, surprise me.
And now, with some of these bigger hosts, are you able to push a conservation message? I know you only have 3 or 4 minutes, and you're trying to get education out there, but of course, Chris and I are huge promoters of conservation, and obviously a lot of the species need people like us sticking up for them, and I just was wondering if you're able to do that, or does it depend on the show?
Yes, absolutely. So, of course, we always try to shoot, you know, go for a conservation message. I make sure it's so I'm so lucky. I'm able to come up with my own talking points. And then what I do is I submit my talking points to the producers, basically. And so we always try to get some type of conservation message in. So what people sometimes don't understand is these shows are live. So sometimes if you're like in the middle of something and then you see the camera guy behind you, like, hurry, you know, like giving you the eye, like, you know, hurry up and twisting the finger. And then everyone's like, come on, you know, look at the clock. And then you have the,
Chris,
you know,
the
cast of the
time.
Fantastic Four, yeah, right there.
Yeah.
Does he really?
Yes.
No way. He's just like, oh. And,
he's like,
and you know what? Chris
ship,
is so
Angie,
funny.
Land the ship. Or land the plane.
See? But when they do that to me, I'm like, oh, wow. I need to, like, really hurry up. And then sometimes they cut you off. But mainly, yes, we try to have a conservation message. And we'll usually, like, we'll pick animal ambassadors. One of my favorites is Aurora the penguin. She's an African penguin from the Turtleback Zoo. And they participate in the species survival program.
Right.
And so we're able to talk about that program. And anyway, so that's, yeah, we'll use key animals like that.
Yeah. Live is just, yeah, that's nerve-wracking. You know, I've been behind the scenes on a couple TV shows with my sister, and, you know, whenever they do a scene, they take like 30 takes. I never knew this. And they take it from multiple angles. So, you know, from behind them and in front of them and to the side and different lighting. And for one day, I sat on set, and it was just one or like two scenes all day was what they did, and they kept redoing it.
So
and
Chris,
and then when you watch TV and you can see like they flip back and forth a bunch. Yeah, live,
no.
My God, especially with animals.
Yeah, well, that, and actually, Chris, I have to say, you're lucky, because with your with the sets you've been on, with the Today Show, it is one take. Or with Late Night, it is one shot. There's no, like,
yeah.
there's no let's redo. It's
redo.
Like, this is going to be, like, we've done shows where we're like, oh my gosh, I hope that turned out okay. But,
it always does. Don't drop that snapping turtle. My God. Don't do it.
No. So, yeah.
So, okay. So, you have all this reptile experience. Do you have like a favorite animal? Like, it's just like, this is your favorite animal that you just love to talk about?
Well, I got my start with reptiles, but because of doing the whole national shows, mm-hmm. apparently, I guess a lot of people also want to see cute and furry and feathered things. So I had to venture into that realm. So I still love my reptiles. I love crocodilians. I really love alligators, like the ones I personally keep. I love the iguanas, my big tortoises. I guess I'm like totally not answering your question because you said pick one, but if there was one animal, like
no
yeah much, I could talk yeah. about, okay, so I love hippos and I love hyenas.
Okay, so we need to put
hippos
and
hyenas
on the menu for our podcast.
Have you got to interact or go behind the scenes with any hippos?
Yes. Oh, I just screamed into the microphone. Yes, it was my number one all-time animal encounter of 2016. I got to go behind the scenes at the Toledo Zoo, and my friends there, hey, John, what's up? Uh-huh. And I think Emma, shoot, I don't know if that's the hippo's name or the keeper. Anyway, so it's anyway, long story short is they had two hippos, and they had a big male named Herbie,
yeah.
And they asked Herbie to come over and open his mouth, and we got to feed him a watermelon, and I got to touch the gelatinous, like I got to touch the side, and I was – die.
Oh, yeah.
Like I was so excited. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, and,
I know
my husband's
favorite animal is a hippo, and that's how he got his career start working in zoos with hippos. And so just recently about 2 years ago, he was able to coordinate a behind the scenes with a hippo at one of the local accredited zoos here in Florida. And it was like a birthday present. Of course, we brought my Xander, who's 4. He was 2 at the time. And John, of course, is my husband, and he's just enamored. It was a hippo he used to work with. And I, of course, am like you, Corbin. I'm like, oh, my God, this is the coolest thing ever. Because at the zoo I worked in Chicago, they had pygmy hippos, which are awesome. But this was not a pygmy hippo. This was the real, yeah, this was the real deal.
Yeah, they're small.
And they're doing all the training with it. And of course, with my 2-year-old, I'm like, Xander, isn't this like the coolest thing ever? But he didn't like, he just wasn't that moved by it. And I'm like, you are going to get pygmy yourself.
Like, whatever.
Like, he didn't want to get in the photo. And I'm just like, oh my. And I was like, I'm like, what is going on? This kid like loves animals. But he might have been taken back by the size. I don't know. Or he's just 2 and being a toddler, like a hot mess. But I feel you, Corbin, because they are so impressive. And my husband used to work with them where they train them to open their mouths, but they also like do dental checks on them. And they, interestingly enough, they have, for listeners that aren't aware, hippos have humongous canines, like crazy. I don't know if canine is the right word. Is that the right word?
Yeah, but a
huge tusk, yeah. Tusk, tooth. Yeah. But
canine teeth, yeah.
But they, interestingly enough, they love their gums, the top, flat top of their mouth scratched. So my husband, when he was a new keeper before he probably even knew anything about animal safety, he was in there rubbing the gums of hippos for training. Now they don't.
I know.
That was like 15, 20 years ago. They don't allow that anymore. Obviously, that was probably not a good choice of him as a young keeper or whatever. Well,
that's why John only has one arm.
Yeah,
right.
That's fine.
But yeah, they used to do some really cool stuff, and so yeah, he just fell in love, and they're really cool, and I promise you, we will cover them on the podcast. It will be dedicated to the episode. Will
please
be dedicated
do.
To my husband, but it'll be you'll.
Oh no, I'm dedicated to Corbin. Your husband.
Yeah,
he's got.
Yeah,
Corbin.
Just Angie, think of me.
Yes.
Yes. No, I would love to hear about hippos. They are so fascinating. And I've seen them out in the wild, but I'm obviously in the wild. You're not able to touch them. And so anyway, so we can.
No, don't touch them.
I do it in my best interviews, and Chris tries to do it as well. So I usually ask our guests to make an animal sound. And we usually focus on a certain species.
Okay.
Of course, with you, we're just talking about animals and entertainment and education in general. So we don't have a specific species. So I'm going to ask, since we're talking about a hippo, can you do a hippo?
Okay, I'm going to try it. Hold on. That was a good one. And just give me the weirdest look. It sounds so bad. God, my dog just looked up at me like, what is going on?
You're killing me.
Did it sound okay?
Oh my gosh. I wish
I could get a selfie in there.
I'm going to give it like a C minus.
A C minus? What the world just began? I am so. You could have given me a C. You could have given me a C plus. Like, are you one of your. Oh my god! Oh, I'm dying right now.
You know, but I will. But I'll tell you what. I will do it when we. I will do my impersonation when we do the hippo podcast. You can listen to it, and then we can discuss, or we can let listeners vote on who does a better one. But I loved your face. You were really into it, and I think that.
I'm like trying to think like how can I improve for the next time someone asks me to do this. No, I can't get deep enough. It's like there.
Should I just do it right now?
Yeah, come on, Ed.
Right now, please do it. Do it.
Like a hippo vocalization. Yes. Standoff.
Okay, do it.
All right.
Okay.
Oh my god, no. You two are killing me.
Okay, we didn't ask for the colobus monkey, we asked for the hippo. I give you a D minus. Angie, have you what?
Oh my god.
Okay, Chris, you need to edit in what a hippo actually sounds like, and then we can like compare
them. I always think it sounds like an old man laughing, so I don't know if I did my best to get that across, but yeah, it's like
that's what they do. They like grunt and they're like and then they anyway. Yeah. Okay.
I think my favorite, doing this podcast the last 6 months with Angie is when she did the tiger chuff or the leopard. Is it leopard chuff? It was during the leopard episode. And she's like, I'm dying laughing. And she's like, in the same room with me, I'm dying laughing. She's like, don't laugh. Don't laugh. Stop it. And I'm just dying. So, Angie, you got to do the chuff.
Come on.
Do
it. Okay. I can't look at you guys. I'm like super.
Why? That's not.
Okay. This is the tiger chuff because, well, and the funny thing is my 4-year-old knows that like tigers don't really roar, right? Lions roar, but tigers, their vocalization is especially when they like you, they make a chuffing sound. And so here's my thing, my attempt. Okay. Did it get better?
It's good though.
She's doing that like 3 feet
from
me.
It is.
What's my grade?
It is good though. I actually would give you B+.
Okay. Yay.
That's good. That was way better than the hippo. I like that.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Chris, do you have any animal noises?
Yeah. Animal sounds.
Do you have any animal noises?
No. Just I sound like a hippo because I have still this damn cold that won't go away. Good old New Zealand.
Yeah.
So let's... No. I love it, though. New Zealand is amazing. It's so beautiful here. So one of the things I want to ask you, you know, using your celebrity... and I think, wasn't it Jack Hanna said edutainment? I know he said it, so I've been using that word a lot. You know, do you have a real sense of responsibility as a spokesperson for these animals?
Yes. And we're in a very tricky time and age where there are people completely against zoos and aquariums and against what I do on TV. And I've been attacked. I've been attacked probably not as much as someone like Jack Hanna, who's more well known. But I think everyone who works with animals in the public eye, or even I would even go down to the ground to saying anyone who works at a zoo has dealt with guest visitors coming in and saying this is not right or this or that. And so, you know, I look at it as like I look at what I do. It's my job. It's all about education. And a huge thing is that, just regarding the argument against zoos and aquariums, so I was actually a spokesperson for the AZA for their SAFE partnership in 2016, and I went into a room full of publishers who were, a lot of them were not for zoos and aquariums, and then after my presentation, and then after meeting some of the ambassadors, were just their minds completely switched around. They were like, wow, this is completely different than what I thought. And they were, their minds were blown when I told them that this conservation initiative that zoos and aquariums have, they raises millions and millions and millions of dollars for conservation, saving wild animals and wild habitats. And a lot of people don't realize that. And, I'm prepared to fight for it. I mean, I think that's what we have to do. And I think it's great to get people. I know there's a lot of people who will never be able to go to Africa or to South America or all around the world to see animals. And so, you know, and of course, I'm only talking about reputable wildlife organizations and zoos. I'm not talking about roadside zoos or people who have tigers as pets. I'm not talking about that. I think that they play really an important role.
No, yeah, that's good. Yeah, we're.
Well, and can.
Yeah, we're behind you. I mean, we're behind you.
Speaking of which, can you give the listeners a little advice on that love animals? And you and I and Chris, all as kids, of course, we were attracted to any animal we could find. I'm sure there's a picture of me with a parrot on my shoulder when I was in Mexico or something as a child where my family didn't know any better. We didn't necessarily understand probably what was going on with the illegal pet trade or animal welfare for that matter. So what advice can you give people that love animals when they see something like that that's maybe not at a reputable zoo? What do they do? Should they take the picture with the white tiger cub? Or how can we what can we do to help promote the safety and well-being of animals that aren't in the wild?
Yeah, so I would just say do your research. You know what I mean? Do a quick research. And nowadays, it is easy to get on your phone. I could do it right now in a quick Google search. take a look and make sure it's from someone who's reputable, or not someone, but usually a facility that's reputable. Make sure they have the proper permits, the licenses, you know. But Angie, I was like you when I was a kid. I have pictures of me. I mean, you know what I mean? You're a kid. My family didn't know either. And so I think education is the most important thing. Do your research. Make sure it's reputable. To give you information, just talking, I have a very good relationship with my producer on the Today Show after so many years of doing this. And he says the first thing they do is they do an intense search on the individual who's coming on, the handlers, to make sure that they follow proper protocol. This is coming from something reputable, licensed, you know, they make sure that everything's intact before pursuing a segment or something like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I was just going to say, you know, especially, I mean, I know here in New Zealand, animal welfare is a big deal. Australia, the EU, so outside the United States, but within the United States, like I think a lot of people don't realize, especially Angie and I being researchers, you know, in previous research, there's so much regulation, and which is good. We're not saying it's a problem. It's just we are heavily regulated to even when I was doing a behavior study on horses. Or at the zoo, the local zoo there in Gainesville, I needed a protocol just for my students to look at an animal. Right,
Chris. Mm-hmm. But that's so, also, it should be noted,
yeah, all the way down.
Of course, at the university level, as far...
Right. And the AZA accreditation, at zoos and stuff.
I mean, a permit is needed to do anything. But that's the big difference is animals that are owned, and this is probably a whole different podcast for a different day, but animals that are privately owned a lot of times are only in the United States are only governed by the USDA, which has somewhat minimal welfare standards. And therefore, that's why the AZA started to begin with, is so they actually said, hey, we want higher standards than that. And we need to govern ourselves and make sure that our animals have exquisite care. Cool. And if you want to be part of these organizations, you have to go through rigorous accrediting processes that happen every 5 years. So a zoo can't slip through the cracks. And anyways, I'm on my little bit of my
horse today, but it's fine. Yeah, get off your horse. No pun intended. No, I'm kidding. Well, so just to kind of flip that around, for instance, I have my own facility. It's a great facility. You know, I take great care of my animals, and it's not AZA. And, you know, we do sometimes give private tours to family members. No, I'm not on the road with the sign saying, you know, $10 for a picture with a snake, which there's nothing wrong with that. If that's how you build, you know, money for your business and you're taking care of your business, that's what you do. So I just think it depends on the situation. And, I just assess the situation. Just make sure just things seem right. Does that make sense?
Well, and I think
when you see something like a parrot on the shoulder or.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Exactly. And I think a lot of it too is, like you said, the permits.
So let's get back into more of the celebrity stuff. So Pamela Anderson, pretty cool. Is there any celebrity you met and you were just like starstruck? You know, you were just like, wow.
Besides Chris and Angie.
Yeah, besides us two.
I know, Chris and Angie. Well, yeah, besides you two. Starstruck. You know, but so, and I'm not trying to, this sounds so cliche, but since I do it now so often, when I see celebrities now, I'm not like, they're not, I don't know, just because you realize they're just people, but I have to say recently, yeah, they're just regular people, but I have to say, one, I mean, the former First Lady, Laura Bush, that was really like, it was like one of those things. And it was like, I found out that morning because they had, you know, they have to be so secure with her. They had Secret Service there. Mm-hmm. And so my producer told me the morning of, but told me you cannot tell anybody. So none of the handlers knew, like none of the zoo staff knew, like, you know, anyway, so that was one of those moments. And she decided to do the segment with me because she's really into wildlife conservation. And I guess she like has a bunch of land in Texas and she has a nature reserve or something. And so wanted to do the segment and she whispered to me in my ear afterwards and she said, thank you so much for what you do. And it was so cool.
Yeah. That's
like,
awesome. Yeah,
this is like, it's so weird.
Yeah. I would be starstruck. I got my PhD from Texas A&M, so I didn't buy it online. Unfortunately, I had to suffer and actually do it. And you know, so George Bush, the dad, I got to see him a bunch. Yeah. And you know, I know Barbara Bush just passed away, but she used to always love driving by our horse farm. We're out there working and wow. So, you know, love the Bush. I saw Jeb Bush and Mommy Bush when George Bush jumped out of the airplane. Anyways, long story short. Yeah. Yeah, I would be starstruck by them, you know, like just, wow, somebody that has affected history of our country, you know.
Right?
And I was like, yeah, like, yeah.
Well, I was like, Corbin, what am I doing like here? Like, I'm like, what am I, like, I'm like touching, first of all, I did something wrong. I touched her, like I touched her shoulder, then I had to recorrect her because we had this behavior, which I, oh my goodness, I know this. Oh, he's one of the world's best bird trainers and he trains these beautiful birds for, you know, for zoo shows. Anyway, we did this thing where, you know, Laura Bush sticks her hand out with a dollar and the rose-breasted cockatoo comes, takes a dollar and puts it in a conservation jar to raise money for conservation. But I remember like having to tell her like, you know, like, come on, you have to wave your arm. And I was touching her and then I saw Secret Service on the side. Like, you know, like I'm like, oh my God, don't tackle me. Oh, super cool though.
Well, yeah, that's awesome. Super cool. That's awesome. My, just to finalize that story, I will say my starstruck moment is so dorky that, and I said it in the, oh, what the hell, Bert? What? I'm having an Angie moment. What species are we covering today?
It's called mom brain, Chris. It's called mom brain. It's a real thing. Look it up.
What did we? What the hell snake did we do, Angie?
Oh, we did Burmese python.
The Burmese python. The
Burmese
python. Even Corbin knows.
So when we did the Burmese, when we did the Burmese python episode, and I was talking about Titanoboa, and I'm at our natural history museum, and right next to me is the grad student. Here I am, a professor. Here's the grad student that discovered Titanoboa, and I'm looking at the Smithsonian Channel. His interview is playing, and he's standing right there, and I was like, oh, my God, that's the guy that discovered Titanoboa. Oh, my God. I was like, that was and I've met celebrities. I've met quite a few celebrities. And I'm just like, wow, what a dork, Chris.
I love
what
that. I love
that is so funny. I sound like such a nerd too, but in my early podcast listening days, I listened to this gal who studied leopard seals in Antarctica, and I just followed her on Twitter, and she followed me back, and I'm like, oh, like, I was like, yes! I was like this random person. I was like, you study leopard seals and Antarctica. You are awesome. Like, anyway, this is so cool.
Yes.
I get you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to reach out to her now. Thank you for the reminder. I will score an interview with her.
You should. Yes. You should. Yeah.
It's like Dr. Getz.
Yeah.
Well, and that actually leads into my next question is who is inspiring you right now, both as either an animal expert or a conservationist or a group?
Ooh, that's a really, really good one. Who is inspiring me? You know, I think Dr. Cynthia Moss is inspiring me with her elephant conservation research. And she's been doing that for, 50 or 60 years. And she's in Kenya right now. Mm-hmm. And I actually, I scored an interview with Dr. Moss, which that's another one. I'm like, wait, what?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'll be looking for that.
Yeah. So I need to schedule it. It's very hard because she works in remote areas in Kenya, in Amboseli National Park. Right. And so that's someone, but anyone who's the forefront of like wildlife conservation. Oh my gosh. A huge one. My heroes, Derek and Beverly Joubert, the national. Have you guys heard of them? They're National Geographic filmmakers.
No.
Oh my God, you guys, they've been around since like the 80s and they have done lion research and they have done leopard research and they started the Big Cats Initiative. And those are like heroes to me. They live in the bush and I'm going to reach out to them too. Why not, guys? Derek and Beverly are just so, so inspirational. Yeah. And
Yeah.
Well, I know that Chris and I have found doing the podcast and reaching out to people of how many conservation and animal heroes or angels, however you look at it, are out there, boots on the ground, some of them behind a computer, some of them on a boat, some of them in tents in the savannah, but really, really doing important work. And I just think that they should be more well known or that they at least should be celebrated because there's so many people that are fighting the good fight for individual species or as a collective group, and my hats go off to them, and I'm so fortunate that once or twice a month I get to talk to them.
That was a really hard question because there's so many people doing great work, and those are just two people or three people came to mind just that stuck out, like, wow, like they're really trying to make a difference.
Yeah. Well, and that's what we found is sometimes just like one person can make a difference. You know, necessarily. I mean, of course, the ones that are with bigger organizations or have more money or more are able to do bigger research, collaborative research, that's fantastic. But even just an individual starting a nonprofit or something like that here in the States to educate people.
Have you?
And I'll go and I'll just go and say, I mean, you know, one of my first interviews with Niaga Leonard, here's this guy, you know, I keep bringing him up, but I'm just so in awe of him, you know, in this little Katmai Island. You know, to move from the U.S. to Vietnam and to dedicate his life to this langur that's going extinct. So, amazing people out there.
I think quick to note, and I just found out about him. He's a 23-year-old inventor and entrepreneur, Boyan. I'm totally butchering his name probably, but Boyan Slat. He's the one who's developing that piece of equipment to clean up the Pacific garbage patch.
I was reading about him.
Yes.
One of us need to reach out to him.
Well, I actually should. And I have to give a shout out. The Joe Rogan Experience, that podcast is a great podcast. And it's one of the most popular podcasts on iTunes. And he interviews so many scientists and biologists and tons of different people. He just had Boyan on. The episode is, episode
1,104.
I will
check that out, Corbin, for sure.
Yes. For the
record,
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, it's episode 1,104 Boyan Slat, April 16th, the Joe Rogan Experience.
Yeah. Wow.
And Chris, Chris, if you haven't checked out Joe Rogan, you need to do it because he has podcasts that go on for 3 hours, and I have listened to the whole thing. We can't go over like an hour, and I agree we should target for 45, 50 minutes, an average commute.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, because he has amazing guests on there, and of course he's amazing.
Great guests.
So I guess when you're really, really awesome, you can go longer.
You can do 3 hours.
Yeah, and yes, and also, Chris, I have to say, some of Joe Rogan's stuff, you find the most interesting stuff in that last hour, or sometimes in the last 10 minutes. Like, I love listening to Joe. He's great. Okay. Yeah, great podcast.
I'll put him back. Yeah, I know he's awesome. Yeah, and podcasting in general is just awesome. So, Corbin, I don't want to take up too much of your time, and I've got one more question, and I know Angie's got one more question. But, you know, really quick, how do we convince people it's worth saving endangered species? It's worth our investment effort?
I think it's our moral responsibility. I think that we are so disconnected from nature. Yeah. Like, we as a human species, we are so disconnected. We're not even in... I think it's ridiculous when people say, oh, we're humans, we're still in the food chain. Like, we're so disconnected from that. And this is my personal opinion. Like, it's our moral obligation to conserve these species just for future generations. And animals have been around, I mean, for millions of years. And then we are just put on this planet. We've only been around for a few hundred thousand years. What, 300,000 years? Is that what it is? Mm-hmm. And,
roughly.
And we are just have had such a negative impact on the species, on biodiversity, the earth, you know, just its habitats. It is our moral responsibility. And, that's really what I can say about that.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, you summed it up in a nutshell. So that is right on. That's the best answer.
I appreciate it.
And that's why I wake up in the morning. That's why we do what we do. And then just my last question with that being said, so somebody listens to a podcast or goes to a zoo or sees you on the Tonight Show, be them 7 years old or 70 years old, and they're inspired and they're moved and they love animals, what is your advice to help them with that mission, either get involved with something animal conservation oriented? What should they do?
My advice to anyone is the sky's the limit, and it doesn't matter who you are, where you live, you can make a difference and you can make something happen. This is your life. Like I said, grew up in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of southern Idaho, in the middle of the mountains, I am living proof, and I am still on my journey. I mean, I am still on this ride of trying to see where my career will take me with animals, but you can make a difference and even start out little. If you have a passion for animals, but let's say your parents don't want you to have an animal, start out, maybe be a volunteer at a local shelter, at a local zoo. And honestly, meet as many people as you can, connect with like-minded people. This is why I love this podcast platform, is that we can all get together and we can all share our message. And I love how we could, like, how when I debut your, you know, your podcast interview, my listeners will now be introduced, if they haven't already, to, you know, the All Creatures podcast, and, you know, vice versa. Mm-hmm. I think it's great to get the message out there. And I think we're all trying to share the same message.
Nope. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Corbin, we just really appreciate what you do. And I really hope that the listeners will go to your website. And what can you give us your information, your website, your Facebook, et cetera?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, yes. So CorbinMaxey.com, M-A-X-E-Y, not I. Save the jokes. Like middle school flashbacks. And check me out. No, seriously, it's horrible. Check me out on Facebook, on Instagram. I also just recently started filming webisodes. So like quick little webisodes every week that air. You can check those out on YouTube. Yep. And then Animals to the Max podcast, where I interview people who are passionate about animals, and I love hearing people's journey. So if you're interested in thinking, how can I work with animals one day? Like, you can listen to people who have done it and succeeded.
Yeah, I love your approach. Like, it was funny. I was playing your Dr. Scott interview, you know, to my son, who used to watch Dinosaur Train all the time.
We loved it.
Yeah. And I'm like, look, it's Corbin. And listen, this is Dr. Scott, the paleontologist. And
my 4-year-old
awesome.
Was a little bit sad that he was real. Like, I guess he thought he wasn't real. I don't know. It's hard to. But interestingly enough, Dr. Scott said in his interview that when people meet him, they'll either hug him and be so happy, or they'll cry. Like, those are the two reactions. So my son fell in the crying category.
Oh my gosh.
Well, Corbin, thank you so much. We could talk for hours with you, no doubt. We can turn it when we reach Joe Rogan levels, if we ever, we will
Let's
talk for
it.
3 hours.
That is the goal.
But right now, it's just what our moms, like, even you said that last pod, your mom listens, you know, my mom listens,
no,
Andy's
but
mom listens.
You guys would be, but listen though, you would be so shocked, because I discovered you just through a quick search. I looked for an animal podcast and you guys come up, and so you would be shocked. Yeah. You should look at the analytics. I told you I have a high listenership in Korea. Like, come on, guys. Yeah. You guys have to.
I love it.
That has to be a fluke, by the way. Anyway, we can get off.
Buy special software to look at those
super
analytics,
fan.
So. They're too much money.
No,
you don't have to.
I do know in New Zealand, though. I will say, in New Zealand, it's me, my friend Jesse, and his girlfriend Bryn. We're the three that, like, have driven
there
our New Zealand numbers way through the roof. So,
there
but
you go.
Thank you so much,
and
Corbin.
Thank you so much. Yes. I had so much fun. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Let's do it again. And until then, keep fighting the good fight. We're really proud of you. Yeah. And listeners, please check them out. CorbinMaxey.com, correct?
Yep. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.